Welcome to session 354, Solitary Faith, with our speaker today, Tiffany Moll, California transplant to Utah, who came to attend BYU and just kind of stayed after a short foray out to Brazil for a mission, and then graduated from BYU in English with a minor in anthropology. The material for this presentation germinated during the time that she remained single past the ordinary marrying age of LDS women. She now works in home health, but that doesn't have anything to do with the presentation. But a delightful young woman, Tiffany Moll.
Okay. I'm happy that people came.
Loud.
I'm happy that people came. Thank you for coming. A little bit later, I'm going to show a DVD, so it's not just going to be me babbling the whole time, so don't worry too much. But I wanted to just kind of quickly preface this by pointing out and reminding everyone that there's a difference between LDS doctrine and LDS culture. Okay, and I mean, there's obvious interplay between the two, but what I'm discussing here and what I'm critiquing here is the culture. And I happen to like LDS doctrine, even though sometimes I might not like how it translates into society so much. But I think for the most part, it translates pretty well. And yeah, she kind of explained what this deal is. It started off as a school project, actually. So it's an investigation of the cultural space inhabited by single LDS women who are single beyond what's ordinary for their religion and their culture. And it's a space I've lived in for a few years now, and some of the people I've interviewed have lived in it for longer than I have, some shorter than I have. And what I'm interested in is the unintended consequences of having an ideal, the married state, so emblazoned in a person's psyche that they are constantly aware of whether or not they match up, especially if they don't match up to it. All the people that I interviewed happen to be faithful, active members of the LDS Church who don't match up to that ideal of marriage and family that's kind of trumpeted as the main purpose of the religion that they love and that they adhere to. And then I sort of situated those interviews with different things that people who have investigated the same topic did. So conjugality is the central tenet of the Mormon religion and subsequently of the Mormon culture. And what I found when I was interviewing these people was that the disappointment and the surprise, in some cases marginalization, that they experience as single women is directly a result of their worldview as LDS women. And it's a discrepancy between what they're taught should happen and what actually does happen. So Mormons believe that only the most righteous souls enter the highest kingdom of heaven, from which they can actually progress to the state of God, sort of an apotheosis. One of the prerequisites for entering this highest sphere is eternal marriage. And so in LDS theology, our Heavenly Father is married to a Heavenly Mother. And in fact, really, in our theology, God is a title and not a name, and it's a title that can only be held by a man and a woman who are joined together in eternal exaltation. So the man cannot be exalted without the woman cannot be exalted without the man, so marriage is a very big deal. In a proclamation to the world, the prophet and apostles explicitly stated that all human beings, male and female, are created in the image of God. Marriage is not only recommended, it is essential. The church as a socializing agent raises its youth to expect full participation in these marital covenants. And it sort of, it guides them through gender-specific programs that are intended to broaden their horizons and prepare them for their calling in life. Ideally within this worldview, what will happen is when the boy reaches adulthood, he's going to go on a mission, and when the girl reaches adulthood, she's going to marry a returned missionary. But sometimes it doesn't go according to plan. Tim Heaton, he studied the demographics of the Mormon family and found that no other group has as high a percentage of members currently married as do Mormons. And this high percentage married is consistent with LDS emphasis on family life. But the study also showed that for every two married women, there is one single sister. So it's a significant little subgroup, really. In their study on the construction of singlehood among Mormons, and I'm sure I'm going to butcher this person's last name, Darrington, Piercy, and Niehaus declared that the meaning of being single for any one person is socially constructed through personal experiences and interactions within the broader culture of that person's social network, mainly their family and friends. So what I did is I gathered narrations of these interactions in order to determine how these events are shaping these women's experience of being single in a heavily marriage-oriented culture. And sort of to describe how I thought about it as I went about it, in the phenomenology of fit, linking the person and environment to the subjective experience of person-environment fit, a group of psychologists isolated three approaches to the study of person-environment fit, or PE fit. The first one is called the atomistic approach, which is used by studies that measure the perceived person and environment separately from one another and then combine them. I thought that approach was inaccurate of how I went about it, because it's impossible to separate these faithful women from their religion. You can't examine them as separate entities from their religion, because for them, as well as for myself, their religion is reality. But then there was another approach called a Mueller approach, where it examined how well people fit into it, and I thought that wasn't right either because they don't fit into it. But the approach that I used was called the molecular approach, or one of studies that directly assess perceived discrepancy between person and environment. And I didn't ask them to rate their experiences in any kind of quantifiable fashion, as sometimes people do in like sociological studies or psychological studies, but instead I wanted a reciprocal descriptive analysis through personal narrative and qualifying questions. So, and a little bit later, as I said, I'm going to show actually a DVD so you can see some of the women speaking for themselves, because I kind of think that's probably the best thing. As the single Mormon woman ages, she feels a growing rift between herself and the society with which she identifies. From birth through adolescence, the Mormon girl is told that her ultimate purpose is to marry a righteous priesthood holder in God's holy temple, where they will be sealed for time and all eternity. She's going to be a wife and mother. She's going to raise righteous children unto the Lord. But as time goes on, the single Mormon becomes increasingly at odds with her community's expectations, as well as with her own ideal self. She's a Mormon, and she's a part of the culture, but she's also kind of apart from the culture. She does not yet fit into that great plan, which is for her the ultimate and only reality. As Liz put it, and I'm quoting, "You grow up in the church, you always have a place. Being a single adult, it drags on. As time goes by, you're not in a place anymore," close quote. President Spencer W. Kimball told LDS girls, "You are daughters of God. You are made in the image of our Heavenly Mother." This quote is also found in Chapter 9 of the Young Women's Manual, which is an instruction guide for those women who are called to teach teenage Mormon girls. While little is known of this goddess young LDS girls are to emulate, herein Lindsay and Mason observed that for Mormons, Mother in Heaven is idealized as the ultimate standard of womanhood. The focus of all that has been revealed about her divine role centers on her functions of bearing and nurturing spiritual offspring. Therefore, it is the religious duty of Mormon women to marry and to bear and nurture children. Based on my study, a more accurate archetype for the single LDS female might be the goddess Minerva, who was the never-married daughter of Zeus, who actively employed her many talents in battle, the arts, and wisdom. She was never tied to a man, yet she was respected and revered. And so if, as single LDS women, they are functioning as Minerva, could it not be that there is perhaps a little Minerva and Heavenly Mother as well? And if women are able to do things that in the past only men were allowed to do, maybe there's something to that as well. And are faithful LDS women, are they trapped in a cage of longing by their own righteousness, or can they be proud of the things they achieve that are maybe not necessarily marriage and motherhood? This mentality does not cease as the female ages. She is constantly reminded of the inappropriateness and undesirability of her single state. As Raines put it, whether the content is gentle or harsh, overt or covert, the attitude of the speaker nearly always communicates that there is something very wrong about being single. This is, of course, referencing different talks that are given in conferences or church or wherever. All of my informants, even the ones who spoke positively about being single, they expressed a very strong desire to be married and to be married during this life. While emphasizing the utmost importance of family, LDS teachings discourage marriage outside of the church, and they absolutely forbid cohabitation or any sort of extramarital relations. And so because of this, people who are strictly obedient to their faith are going to wind up living possibly very lonely lives, unless they're otherwise engaged by friends, most of which are probably going to be married with children, depending on where they live, I suppose, or family. Ironically, though, many of my informants, they felt most aware of their single state when they were with their family, because their family keep bringing up, like, oh, when are you going to get married, blah, 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 all these different things. So despite discouragement from the church for marrying outside of the covenant, several informants admitted they had and would consider such a marriage, even if it was only for this life. And so, obviously, the concept of marriage isn't unique to Mormonism, but the amount of emphasis and urgency put on it is. I don't know how many of you might have gone to primary or not. I did, and I remember we were always singing these little songs like, oh, I want to see the temple, I'm going there someday, like all these little songs. And so, you know, if you're going to church your whole life, you're always having this plan laid out before you, and you're always just expecting that, oh, I'm going to fit into this plan, you know. So it's kind of, a lot of people get surprised when they don't fit into that, such as myself. The highest church authorities issued a proclamation stating the divine emphasis on parenthood and replenishing the earth. They said, the family is ordained of God. Marriage between a man and a woman is essential to his eternal plan. Children are entitled to birth within the bonds of matrimony and to be reared by a father and a mother who honor marital vows with complete fidelity. And that was proclamation to the family. The single Mormon woman might serve a mission. And when she returns from that mission, she's already going to be past what is the norm for many females in her religion. One half of Mormon women are married before the age of 21 and have a child before their 23rd birthday. One informant, Tammy, converted to Mormonism in her teens. Before moving to Idaho to attend what was then known as Ricks College, Tammy thought she would get married in her 30s. That's what seemed normal and reasonable to her in her previous non-Mormon context. But then when she moved to Ricks College, all of a sudden it was, oh, no, I should be married already. I should be married right now. So everywhere the Mormon looks, there's the message of marriage and family. The religious centrality of family is architecturally portrayed in the church's most sacred of structures, the temple. Of Mormon temples, Douglas Davies explains that weddings taking place within them are for time and for eternity, reflecting a belief guaranteed through the key rite of the sealing of partner to partner. Something that I thought was interesting and kind of surprised me a little bit was that all of the people that I interviewed, they talked about marriage in earthly terms, like not like, oh, well, when I die, I'll get married. It was always like, I want to get married, and it was never referencing afterwards. And that's something that you're often told in the LDS religion, is that whatever doesn't work out during your life, it's going to work out once you're dead. So when you're dead, you'll be happy. Some informants expressed their belief that church leaders just don't know what to do with us. I know, like, me, myself, when I think about, like, oh, well, maybe God will set me up with a stripling warrior or something after I'm dead. I don't know. That'd be good. As Raines and Parsons pointed out, the church, lagging 10 years behind society, discovered single people as a group in the 1970s and implemented singles wards and young special interest programs. In their study on the Mormon family, the Campbells observed that in the process of becoming a god, a man must enter into a new and everlasting covenant of marriage, by which he and his wife, or wives, it said, will be married for all eternity and will have the privilege and duty of procreating spirit children throughout eternity, even as God procreated us. And obviously that reference in the plural to wives is an archaic church doctrine for at least people who aren't FLDS. When church authorities, all of which are men, speak about singlehood, they address each gender very differently. Single men are viewed in a consistently negative light, whereas single women are viewed as poor, unwanted creatures to be pitied. This attitude is indicative of the man's cultural role as initiator. It is he who chooses the mate. Summer, one of the people I interviewed, made the following observation, and I quote, "I think that they're harsher on single men than they are single women. I feel like the Mormon church looks at single men as if it's their choice, and single women as if nobody wanted them, which really bothers me, and I don't believe is the case in my situation and in many other situations," close quote. President Joseph Fielding Smith addressed young men. "Any young man who carelessly neglects this great commandment to marry, or who does not marry because of a selfish desire to avoid the responsibilities which married life will bring, is taking a course which is displeasing in the sight of God. And of course, there's that famous quote about you're a menace to society when you hit this certain point. But to young women, Smith said, "You good sisters who are single and alone, do not fear. Do not feel that blessings are going to be withheld from you. You are not under any obligation or necessity of accepting some proposal that comes to you which is distasteful for fear you will come under condemnation." And so again, this differing attitudes towards the different genders is kind of highlighting the different roles that people are guided towards in the church. In Mormon culture, the man is generally the aggressor, the woman more passive, though different degrees of passivity exist. And some of the people I interviewed indicated that the boundaries of who initiates a relationship, according to their observations, are beginning to blur. President Kimball expressed, "I sincerely hope that our Latter-day Saint girls and women and men and boys will drink deeply of the water of life and conform their lives to the beautiful and comprehensive roles the Lord has assigned to them." Close quote. So the church berates men because it is they who have the prescribed role as relational aggressor. The woman simply waits to be noticed and chosen, so how can she be blamed? Unless, of course, she's willfully chosen other pursuits apart from marriage. The church emphasizes strict obedience and submission to the will of God. Men and women are designated distinct roles. Yet, as we've seen with society changing over time, it's possible for people to have independent existences. And this independent condition is the reality for all of the people that I interviewed. So again, there's a disjunct between what they're told to expect, hope, and strive for, and what has actually happened, producing a mild form of cognitive dissonance, really, and in some cases not so mild. Something that surprised me as I was interviewing them, and I wasn't looking for this is something I noticed afterwards, was that most of the women I interviewed, they saw having a career and being married and having children as mutually exclusive. Like, they were always talking in terms of, well, the good thing about being single is that I can do what I want, I can work, I can travel where I want, and then maybe when I get married I can focus on being a wife and mother. And it seemed like they weren't able to make those two things come together, which I think they can. I don't think it has to be one or the other, but the people I interviewed, it was always couched in those terms of either or. In Mormonism, it is the male who holds the priesthood or the power and authority to act in the name of God. Whether or not informants felt a lack of priesthood in their lives varied. Women who had good home teachers or male family close by didn't feel a lack of priesthood at all, but others did. And it is only through marriage that a man and his wife benefit from the highest order of the priesthood. The desire to foster and inspire lasting familial bonds is definitely a good desire. It's just that some people slip through the cracks. I'm going to read a quote by a woman who is about 50, and she's never married yet, and she's, you know, stayed with the church and following it all her life. And her name is Rhonda, and she said, "This life that I have led for so many years isn't really the life that I thought I would be leading. But as I've gotten older, even though I still have my true righteous desire, I also feel like the Lord had a different plan for me. But that's taken a lot of years for me to come to grips with and to be happy with me and to not be sad all the time." Close quote. And as I've been kind of thinking about this stuff, I kind of wonder if it wouldn't be healthier to maybe, maybe suggest at a young age that, you know, it's possible to live a good life without getting married and having kids. You can still be, you know, a saint if you want to. You can still be constructive. Some women, they cited the example of Sherry Dew as a bolstering influence. They felt like that was a person that finally they saw speaking at conference that they could actually relate to. So anyways, their stories, they range from comical to depressing, but all of them have this inherent frustration accrued by the chafing of their single status with their most deeply held communal and individual beliefs. And the incongruity between what should be and what is naturally wears on the minds of these single LDS women. And every single one of them hopes to be married and hopes to be married during this life. Okay, so that's kind of my little analyzation of it. And now I'm going to actually show you footage of the women themselves, because I think it's best to just let people speak for themselves. I wasn't able, unfortunately, to capture all the people I interviewed, because not all of them live in the state, but I did get some really good ones, and they said some really good things.
"For one thing, I believe in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I have a testimony. Majority of people are married to the church. I happen to be single in the church. So there's times that it's very difficult. There's times where
is there like tech support or something?
Being single, I just feel that I'm just
doubt we're going to be able to hear this sufficiently.
Culture and basically like my ward. But then there's times when you're around families a lot that it's difficult maybe to go to church. And so I find myself being sitting at home.
Can you hear it at all? Probably not.
Because I'm too emotional to be around the family.
I thought that if I didn't get married before I was 25 years old, it would be too late. No, I don't know why I thought that way. I think that was just something that I created, but it was also probably a product of the culture that I grew up in. And I think we have to recognize that there's a difference between my beliefs in the church and the culture of the church, and they're both pretty different. So there's nothing in the scriptures that talks about getting married before you turn 25, but that's kind of the perceived culture. And so I'm 24 years old right now, and I've got a year left, you know, but I don't feel like there's a timeline so much anymore, but growing up I did. And I know that I felt like if I didn't get married before mission age, that something had kind of gone wrong. Because people used to say to me, like, oh, you'll be married before you're 21 years old. Oh, you'll be married before then. And I guess I felt like if that didn't happen, then somehow I would have failed somehow or other. Hadn't gone on enough dates, wasn't pretty enough. I don't know the reasons behind it, but I felt like I would have been a bit of a failure if I didn't get married before I had the chance to go on a mission. Because only the girls who are too ugly to get married go on missions. And that's not in the teachings of the church, but that's part of the culture as much as we don't want to admit.
Can you hear in the back, though?
I think in Utah, I am viewed by LDS culture that I'm an old woman. Because I feel like in Utah, a lot of people get married younger, they have their families. In Utah, I'm just an old woman. But if you go to, you know, the bigger cities where there's more career-oriented people, Boston, D.C., California, I'm normal. Growing up in back east, a lot of people don't get married until they're in their 30s anyway. So I just assumed, you know, I'd go to school, get my college out, maybe do a little working, and then get married. You don't really think about getting married until you're in your 30s back there. But it was when I went to Rick's College that I all of a sudden had a change of, or like my mind, my thinking changed about when I would be getting married. Because there, it's all...
I'm turning it down so it doesn't like...
It's one of our wires plugged in.
Okay.
Looks like it... stretch it well.
Oh, right, that sounds like a good something. Thank you so much.
No problem.
That just saved me. Do I X out of this?
I'm not familiar with that. Yeah, X out of it.
X.
I think we need that.
Okay.
Almost like you have to get married when you're 19 or 20 rather than just waiting until you're 30. And nobody in my high school or growing up would ever have gotten married or even thought about getting married that young. It was very rare and just not heard of. And when kids did get married that young, it was kind of like, oh, they got in trouble or something that was going on.
When I lived in Provo, or like worked in Provo.
Do you want me to start it over a little bit?
I felt like there was a lot more judgment.
It's okay.
I had one guy literally ask me,
this is quite about when I would be getting married, because there it's almost like you have to get married when you're 19 or 20 rather than just waiting until you're 30. And nobody back in my high school or growing up would ever have gotten married or even thought about getting married that young. It was very rare and just not heard of. And when kids did get married that young, it was kind of like, oh, they got in trouble or something that was going on.
When I lived in Provo or like worked in Provo, I felt like there was a lot more judgment. I had one guy literally ask me, this was quite a few years ago too, like he asked me what was wrong with me because I wasn't married. So you start to feel like there's literally something wrong with you because you're not dating, or you don't have a boyfriend, or you're not engaged, or you're not married. Living in Salt Lake, it's a little bit more diverse, and so I don't have that problem as much.
Yes, absolutely. I thought I would get married. From the time I was 4 years old and on, I was 100% completely boy crazy. That was my mission in life, was to find a husband and get married. And I knew I would. I was going to get married, and I was going to have a big family. I wanted lots of kids. And yes, there was never a question. I was going to get married. And then as I began to grow up, I became quite popular with the boys. And so I knew I would have opportunities, and I knew that I would get married. It was just never a question.
I thought I would get married fairly young, early 20s. I thought that I would get married then because that seemed to be the norm. It probably, like, when I moved to Utah, it was, I think that idea became stronger because there were more weddings here. There were more people getting married. And that just seemed to be the time people did it. So it didn't occur to me that I would be the one that didn't.
Yeah, I thought I would get married. And, you know, and I did, but I didn't think what happened to my marriage would happen. So yeah, I thought I would get married. And even as I got to be college age, I really felt like I would get married. And, you know, and that came about. But what completely surprised me in life and in relationship is that marriage ended, and that I didn't have that life that I expected. So
before I went on a mission, I started dating this guy. And I had liked him for, I don't know, I'd known him for a long time, and I started dating him, but I still felt strongly that I was supposed to go on a mission, and he wasn't at the right spot anyways. He was actually excommunicated, and so I knew it couldn't go anywhere for at least a year, and I figured I have 18 months, so then he has an extra 6 months to get back on track. So I kind of was just dating him, and then knowing I was going on my mission, and figured that he could get back while I was gone, and then it would at least be for himself, because I wouldn't be there dragging him along to everything. But yeah, before I left on my mission, I felt very strongly that I could marry him, but I also knew that I wasn't supposed to marry him if he wasn't back and active in the church. But I did feel very strongly like I could marry him if he was back in the church. But I went on my mission and things happened, and it became clear to me, maybe because I was closer to the Spirit at the time, but it became clear that he was not changing and he wasn't going to come back, at least not while he was dating me. I mean, I can't say whether he will ever come back because that's not for me to decide. But with me, he wasn't going to come back. And so I had to do the whole Dear John thing, and I realized that, like, it wasn't going to work. But at the same time, like, having that strong of an answer, like, I really did feel like I could marry him. And, like, I was kind of going through conflicting things because there's talks that say, like, there's no such thing as the one, but then there's other ones that say, make sure you're marrying the right person. So I kind of always felt like, okay, well, there's no one, but Heavenly Father knows who we're going to end up with. So there kind of is a one. But I started realizing that if it didn't work with this guy, that there isn't necessarily a one and only, because if we believed in a one and only, I would be stuck with this guy who may not ever come back. And I don't feel like if we're living up to our end of the bargain and living up to our to the second estate, that we're going to be punished if someone else chooses not to. And so I feel like we have many options, and there is a right person as far as Heavenly Father knows who we will end up with. But we may meet several people who we are compatible with that it could work out if we are both doing our part to live up to our second estate.
I think that the LDS leadership does not know what to do with older single people. I think they don't know what category to put us in. They don't know, well, do we send them to family wards? Do we create singles wards for themselves? Do we keep them in the, you know, younger singles wards? I think they don't know what to do with us. I think they feel sorry for us because it's out of the norm for so many people to be single at such an older age.
It did seem to me like the leadership of the church was aware that they had a growing big problem on their hands because the single population was growing so dramatically. And this was kind of new, unexplored territory for them and a new issue for them to deal with. And so they would try one method of handling it or one avenue, and they'd try that for a while or a couple of years or a few years and see if that worked. And if that didn't seem to be working, then they'd stop that and they'd try something else. Like they were almost, the sense to me was that they were kind of frantically trying to find something that would help this huge population of singles within the church.
I do feel pressure to get married. Well, not so much anymore now that I'm in a family ward, but when I was in a singles ward, I felt it very, very much, especially towards the end when I was out of like a university singles ward, when I was just in a regular city singles ward, because all they ever talked about was getting married, dating. They set up activities where you had to, if you went with a date, you could, you know, go to the activity for half off, or you'd get something because you brought a date, or they set up a little date box and you could put names in of who you had crushes on, and if they had a crush on you, then they'd set you up on a date. And so it was tons of pressure because everybody wants you to get married, and everybody just is like, you know, this is the step that you need to be taking. It's the very first step. So I feel it way more from church and LDS people. Of course, my family, they're all back in New York still, so they, you know, most people don't get married until they're in their 30s, and only my mom is LDS, so they're very much, you know, just get married when you want and take your time, there's no rush. So they see it from a little bit different viewpoint, I think, because they're not LDS, they're fine.
There was this one time when I was at Time Out for Women, and it was somewhere in California, I don't remember the exact occasion, but Sherry Dew was speaking. And I hope I will give an accurate description of the story. If not, if she sees this video, she can kill me later or chase me down later or something. But she gave an account of how she had a nephew who she was in the car with him, and the nephew was like, "Aunt Cherry, when are you going to get married?" And she's like, "Well, I just haven't found the right one yet." And he's like, "Well, I pray every night, and I know Heavenly Father answers prayers. And I've been praying, and you're still not married, so when are you getting married?" And she's like, "Well, the right one isn't here, so whenever he comes along, God will help him find me, and it'll all work out." And he goes, "Well, so God will help you?" And she's like, "Yeah, God will help me, it'll all work out." And she's like, he's like, "Well, what can God do if he doesn't like your face?" And she's like, "Well, if he's the right one, he'll like my face." And he's like, "But what can God do if he doesn't like your face?" And he was just so confused. And it was a really cute story. And it was kind of a humorous way to lighten up things, because Sherry Dew is an amazing woman. And she is still single. But she obviously hasn't met the right one yet.
I know a lot of leaders have been quoted to say that, you know, as long as you're a righteous member of the church, you know, you can marry any other righteous member. And I'm sorry, but I have to disagree, and with all due respect, but I do believe maybe some people could. I know myself well enough that it's not enough. I mean, yes, that is definitely a top characteristic that I'm looking for, is a strong priesthood holding man, but I'm not going to settle just because he's a nice guy.
I was very happy, but I did not feel complete. So I was satisfied but not complete. It always felt like something was missing. And as I said, I was boy crazy from the time I was 4 years old. And so it was a mission of mine to find my husband. And so that was always on my mind, and I was always searching for that. Sometimes possibly appearances were that I was desperately searching for that. I would travel long distances. I flew from California to Arizona for a blind date on my own dime. I was in hot pursuit of finding a husband.
I had a situation when I moved into a certain ward, and I was sitting in the Release Society, and after release, because they always ask, oh, you know, are you married? Do you have children? When you first move into a ward, you're asked these questions immediately. And so I say, no, I've never married. I'm single. And I had this woman after Release Society say to me, so you're single? And I said, yes, I am. She goes, stay away from my husband. And I'm like, what? What brought this on? I'm just sitting here at church. I'm just participating with Release Society. I'm introducing myself as a new person in the ward. And I've had comments said to me like that throughout my life. And, you know, certain comments like that can even make a person, if you don't have a real strong testimony, not want to come back to church, because then you feel like you're not welcomed.
Yeah, I have felt marginalized as a single person. I think that, and I have felt it more in the church than any place else. So in employment, I never really have felt that. But in the church, I have. I think that people, if you're single, that you don't have the support system from a husband, and so you can't handle certain things. And so it's interesting, because before I was divorced, I would receive callings to do things with a lot more responsibility. And since I've been divorced, nothing like that, which has been an interesting change to me, because I know, you know, and not that it matters what calling you're called to, but it's just been an interesting change. And I almost wondered if it's, they think, oh, well, you know, she doesn't have the support of a husband, so she just can't handle something with that kind of responsibility. And in some respects, that has been, it has been helpful, because being a single mom is overwhelming at times and really hard and time consuming. You know, it's just, it's a difficult situation. But on the other hand, you know, I know that I have done things in the past, and so I know that I'm capable. And so, yeah, it can be a little bit difficult. And then, not as much now, but especially as I was first single after being married, I found myself being marginalized a little bit by family, because they didn't consider me whole anymore as a family. So, I mean, in my view, even though I don't have a husband anymore, I have my son, and so we are a family. And so we function as a family. We have complete family home evenings, and we have all of these things that a family would do. And for some time, not anymore, because they have learned, but for some time, I felt that a little bit from family, that they didn't, from my extended family, that they didn't consider me to be whole in that way, and that we weren't a family anymore, that I was kind of taken from being an adult woman responsible for things to back to like teenager, college age.
Of course I feel marginalized. I mean, I think the high percentage of the congregations in the church are family wards, and they call them family wards. Singles wards versus family wards, and so there's a separation between the two. It's almost kind of segregation. but in areas where there aren't enough singles, you just attend a family ward. So it's almost as though you don't have a place, because there aren't enough of you. So yeah, I mean, by the very definition of having not as many, you feel marginalized.
I have when you go to maybe general conference, or there's certain talks in general conference or Release Society general conference where you feel like you're cast out. And so there's times when I feel that way. That's why I really enjoyed it when Sherry Dew was in. She made me feel like I wasn't cast out. And that's why I feel like it's so important to have somebody that's single in the General Release Society board, because they know how these single women are feeling. And I always felt a part of it. I always enjoyed when she would talk, because
I could relate to the things that she had gone through as a single person. And it made me feel like I wasn't out there alone in the church.
You know, there was one Christmas holiday season that I believe I did feel marginalized. And certainly no one intended that. I was in my early 30s, and the other people in the ward that were my age were the men were members of the elders' quorum, and then they had their wives. And but because I was single, I didn't fit with the elders' quorum. I was supposed to go with the high priest, who were typically older people, and it's their job to take care of single women in the church. So mostly that was widows. There were a few divorced women, and then me. And so it was typically people quite a bit older than I was. And they'd invite me to their Christmas parties and stuff. And I just really didn't feel welcome, wanted. I felt like I was an obligation. And I just remember being a particularly crummy feeling.
I think the church is really trying to embrace that and make every person, no matter what their status is, I think they're really trying to encompass that and work harder on that to make people feel welcome in the church. Because there's times when you might be a divorced mother or a single mom or a single person in the church, and you're surrounded by all these married women, and you feel categorized, and so I think they're really trying to work on that and trying to bring it together that basically you're women and we're here to support each other. We're here to work together on a common goal and support each other, and so I feel like they're really working on it. And just like when they had Sherry Dew in the presidency, I think it's important in the Relief Society presidency to have a single person so they know how those people feel. And so they can address those, like in talks, or just basically not just zero in on being married, but zero in on just true gospel principles that will encompass every single woman in the church.
I can think of one occasion where I was asked to go to the stake was asking for singles from each of the wards, and so I was asked to go to this meeting, and they wanted to talk to people about you know, what they could do to help the older singles. And it was interesting because so many people felt so bitter and shunned, and you know, especially for those that had been married in their wards and then divorced but had stayed in that ward. So they were the spouse that had stayed, and they felt treated completely differently. And I have to say that I have felt that myself, especially with men, because they don't, you know, because I'm young and they don't know how to deal with somebody that is single and young and being on a peer basis with them.
I do feel a lack of priesthood in my life right now, mainly because I live alone and it's just me, and my family's all in New York, but regardless, my mom and I are the only members of the church, so I didn't have the priesthood when I was growing up, and I don't have it here now. I mean, I have it with my guy friends, but most of them are married, and it's kind of, it feels awkward sometimes to call up your friend and be like, can I get a blessing from your husband?
I never felt the lack of priesthood. I'm very close to my family, and all of my male family members were honorable priesthood holders. And I always felt like anytime I ever needed anything, I had someone I could go to. I had my dad, my brother-in-law. As my nephews got older, them, ward members, neighbors, bishops, that was never a concern for me.
Earlier this year, I got really sick, and I was, being single and not having, I did feel like I had to kind of rack my brain, who can I call? I didn't, at the time, I didn't know who my home teachers were, or I didn't feel comfortable calling anyone in my ward. And I did have a friend that I could call that came over and gave me a priesthood blessing, but that was probably the time when I did feel like there was a lack of priesthood in my life. But generally, day to day, I don't know if I recognize that there's a lack of priesthood because I'm so used to the absence.
In our church, we believe that, as I was talking about before, that progression and that growth that we can get through marriage is how we can gain our ultimate supreme glory, is through marriage. And so the concern of the leadership by having such a large single population is that those people are going to miss out on some of those opportunities, and they want everyone to be able to have the opportunity of that marriage and that growth experience.
Because the gospel often speaks about the family as the most meaningful way that you can contribute, I think sometimes that gets interpreted as the only meaningful way that you can contribute. And so instead of having it be a worthwhile and beautiful endeavor to create a family and to have a family, I think sometimes that becomes the only path that you can take. And so I think I've often felt that if I didn't get married, I would be devoid of meaning. And I don't think that's true, but that is often, I think, sometimes how I feel.
Not anymore. since I started going back to school, I haven't really cared as much about it because I have this future. I have these future plans that I'm making for myself, and so I don't feel as much pressure because I don't need someone to fill this empty hole anymore because it's been filled. And I think people have maybe given up a little bit. I mean, after I was divorced, you know, my parents and siblings and everybody was like, oh, you know, lining me up in friends were lining me up with people and all of this, and I was dating a lot and just didn't ever find the right guy. And, you know, it wasn't for lack of trying. I was really trying, but now it's been enough time that it just isn't a subject that anybody talks about anymore, or anybody says, you know, are you gonna find that right guy? And the only time it comes up anymore is when I'm on a date and they say, so you've been single for how long? And they're wondering what's wrong with me. And I just think, well, just haven't found the right guy, sorry. But and I have less pressure on myself again because now I have made the choice to do something for myself, do something big and make huge changes. Because when I decided to go back to school, it meant quitting my job and selling my house and, you know, just giving up my life that I had before and starting all over again. And it's empowering to know that I can do that and that I can step into the dark and that it can be okay and better.
What's really important, and as I've grown older, to realize is that the Lord had a different plan for me than the plan that I thought would be the plan for me. And it's taken me a while, as I've grown older and aged, that I need to trust in the Lord with everything that I do in my life, and that everything will work out, and that the purpose of my life will come to pass the way it should be, not the way I thought it would be. And I think that's one of the biggest learning experiences that I have had as being single, is that I can finally sit back and be peaceful with the life that I have led and I continue to lead,
because I trust in the Lord and I put Him first.
You know, we put these expectations on ourselves, and you know, we do everything right. You know, we take the steps that we're told that we're supposed to take, and we, you know, we go to church, we read our scriptures, we do everything that we're told that we're supposed to do to gain the blessings of eternal marriage and, you know, having a family. And when we don't get that, you know, I've seen people get very frustrated and just, you know, say, well, I'm doing everything right and, you know, I'm not getting the expectations that I expected or that have been promised, so I'm going to go out and get what I want my own way. I think when you turn your back on the gospel, you know, you give up the faith that you have. The one thing that I try to hold on to is, you know, the scriptures tell us that, you know, Heavenly Father is bound to His promises. And, you know, in my patriarchal blessing, it does state that I will be married and have a family. And so when I'm feeling really lonely or frustrated, I do try to remember that promise that I've been given. And so I try to fulfill my end so that His end will be fulfilled. And in the meantime, I really just need to be patient. And that can be the hardest part, but it doesn't mean that my life can't be fulfilling or gratifying. I try to focus on fulfilling it in other ways.
Just recently, I received a blessing from my cousin, and he said that I will be able, excuse me, to touch other people's lives, that maybe my sisters wouldn't be able to. And that's talking about my nieces and my nephews, that they will come to me, because being a mom, sometimes you can't talk to your mom about certain things in your life. And that was just a recent blessing that I received, that it helps me feel like I'm a mother to them.
For me, the pressure that's given in the church, like, because families are important, but it's also important to realize that your self-worth is more than just, like, being in a relationship. But a stake president of mine once told me that, like, our number one priority is God and our number two priority is our spouse. And so when we're not married, we need to make that a top priority, is finding our spouse. But as long as we're doing what we need to be doing and, like, keeping our eyes open, I feel like that's the only pressure that's really required. Like, if we're out in the world doing what we need to be doing, if the right one comes along and we're not completely closed off, we're going to be able to notice when they do come along. And it won't always be in the right timing that everyone else thinks it should be. And when I was Relief Society president in a singles ward, I tried to let the girls know that it didn't have anything to do with whether or not they had a boyfriend, that their worth was more than that. On my mission, I had studied the Old Testament. Well, I guess I read through all the scriptures, but when I was reading through the Old Testament, I was paying particular attention to all the women that were mentioned in the Old Testament, and I actually found that there were a lot. Some of them aren't by name, but even the ones that just have, like, a brief verse and a mention and then a story, the thing that I found was interesting is, as you go through the Old Testament, every single woman that is mentioned, if she is righteous and had any type of influence in the world around her, everyone around her was righteous. And if she was wicked, then everyone around her was wicked. And her influence, a woman's influence, is really more than what we seem to think it can be. And we have influence in lots of different ways.
and sometimes we're needed in ways before we devote our time to our families. And my interview through Facebook, I guess I mentioned Florence Nightingale and Mother Teresa. They wouldn't have been able to dedicate as much time as they did had they been married and preoccupied with taking care of their own kids. And I believe strongly that there's a time for everything, and sometimes we're needed in ways. And if we were otherwise preoccupied with the family life that could come later, we won't find the right one until we've completed other things that need to happen in their time. And so I feel like everyone will have the chance to find the right one, but it doesn't always happen in the timing that everyone else in the church thinks it should happen.
How do I feel about being single? Honestly, I think it's ambivalent. Like I have this kind of love-hate relationship with being single. I really love the freedom and excitement of being single. I can do whatever I want. I can go teach English in China for as many years as I want. I can go and develop this fabulous and really successful career. I can learn as many languages as I want. I can play all sorts of instruments. And so, yeah, I think there's a great deal of excitement that goes along with being single. And I feel excited about it a lot of the time. But then there's the other part of it, because it's a love-hate relationship. There's the part of hating it where you feel lonely. And I think the loneliness is a big part. It's somewhat inescapable. And I don't know, sometimes I'm afraid to go home to my home congregation, because growing up, there were a number of older sisters who didn't get married, and I always heard them referred to in pity, but I don't want to be pitied. I want to be respected, and I want to be respected for what I do accomplish, even if that doesn't include marriage or family.
So just kind of wrapping up, something that's obvious to me, and I'm sure to you, and probably doesn't even need to be said, but I'm going to say it anyway, is that the church leaders, they do not sit around thinking, how can we make single people feel horrible? And that doesn't happen. What they do is they focus on families and making strong families, and I think that's a good thing, and I think that's an important thing. But just for this, I was interested in the unintended consequences. So then if there are any questions real quick, I think we have like a minute or two for those maybe. And if not, you can just leave and that's fine with me. Yeah.
I have some comments actually.
Sure. Right? Sure, go ahead.
As a person almost 60 who's never married and who now is no longer involved with the LDS Church, it's interesting to hear all of this because I've either said or heard virtually every one of those words ever been involved in those conversations over my life. And I have to say that since I stopped going to church, like, the single issues have become virtually non-issues. And in my heart, you know, it's no longer... it's moved.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's interesting to me that Sister Day is like the poster child of single women in Mormondom. And that, did I say it right?
Jude.
Sister Jude.
I know what you mean, yeah.
Sister
Jude.
And she is the only true and loving single person who has had any responsive or never married person.
Right. Yeah.
Who has ever had any kind of who currently has any kind of status, as far as I am aware and from my distant pedestal. But and that's kind of sad, isn't it? That she carries this whole mantle of, you know, being the face of single womanhood in the LDS Church. Because certainly there are many, many other women who are faithful Latter-day Saints who could be up there on the poster with her, but for whatever reason haven't gained that status. The other thing is, of course, the priesthood. Not here. know.
You're fine. You're fine. Yeah.
The priesthood issue, and it's, as a person who has struggled, who previously struggled with the whole notion that only, you know, the women for are not given that of the opportunity by the church to hold the priesthood. These are some of the very issues that bring people to those concerns, because, you know, what about the single woman who doesn't have access to the priesthood, and why? So that's, of course, not your conversation necessarily.
It was a point.
Not the strongest point, not mm-hmm. the strongest issue. But it certainly is. Does anybody else want to say something, and I just keep talking? Then the other issue was the whole singles ward thing, because I spent way too many years in singles wards. And having the church, and I heard somebody say this, jack us around. You know, you can only go to a singles ward until you're this age. Then you have to go back to the family's ward. Okay, now we're reestablishing the singles ward. Oh, well, some general authority's daughter was hit on in a singles ward by an elderly person. So now they're doing something else. And it was very, very frustrating to be the guinea pigs. Of course, like I said, since I had removed myself, I don't feel that guinea pigish anymore. But I'm sure it's still going on, because my neighbors who are live in a situation in a townhome community where several of the women are single, active LDS people, and they, from what I understand, are kind of in a similar quandary.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, thank you for letting me.
Yeah, thank you for your thoughts. Thank you. Was there something?
Oh, I was just going to say, Barbara Thompson, who's in the Red Roof Society presidency, is single. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
People realize that.
Cool.
Did you find any solutions or any recommendations through your project?
Well, something interesting to me, it seemed like the longer somebody had been single, kind of, not always, but sometimes the more okay with it they felt a little bit. Well, okay, fine. That was just one person, because now I'm thinking of different ones. But I don't know. I think they did give good advice and things. And I mean, and you heard some advice that they gave and everything. One of the people on that video is right there, actually. Her name's Kim, and she's my aunt. but yeah, I don't know. It makes sense that now you feel better about it, because now you're not in a place where the focal point is marriage, 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 children, you know, but yeah. And I mean, I don't think that the church is being vindictive at all. I think that their intentions are good, and I think that the church is a good thing, you know. It's just that there are these unintended things that do happen, and they're just interesting to me.
I thought one thing that came out was at least listening to the various young women and older women, was coming to the reality that their self-worth was the most important element. And, you know, granted, there are expectations and hopes that we all have, and dreams, and as a man, etc., that I still have unfulfilled. And just because one is married, it doesn't guarantee any celestial
right.
glory. It still comes back to one's own self-esteem and self-worth. And if it affects their self-esteem, that's the harmful part, okay? If they can get beyond anybody, not just them, the negative impact on one's self-esteem, and I think that's what the church is struggling with, is how does one balance the importance of a family unit, which is an important unit,
mm-hmm.
with those that aren't part of a unit but are every bit as important and can give everybody, like that one young lady said, her callings changed once she wasn't married.
Right.
Maybe there was an undue sensitivity by somebody to not overburden, but at the same time, did she change? No. Were her capabilities any different? No. But did she perceive them as being less? That's the concern.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how one goes around that, I have no idea.
Yeah.
But in listening to this, those are the ideas that are going to mind in my mind.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.